welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the writer Peg Alford Purcell. Peg Alford Purcell is the author of Show Her a Flower, a Bird, a Shadow, published by ELJ Editions in 2017. Her work has been published in many fine journals and publications, including the Journal of Compressed Creative Arts, Rhino, Forklift Ohio, the Cortland Review, and others. She received her MFA from the Warren Wilson Program for Writers and lives in Northern California. Hi, Peg, how are you?
I'm wonderful. It's great to be here, Jan. Yeah, it's great to be here.
We're really happy that you're here. I mean, you're here all the way from California, so that's a really big treat. And I want to say congratulations on your new book.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. So you're going to start with some pieces from that book.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. Thank you. The first is Day of the Dead. When I was a child, Day of the Dead meant sugar skulls, staying up past midnight, marigolds, burning copal, blazing votives. I didn't recognize any of the faces in the photographs on the altar. Now I have my own dead, and no sweet bread, hot wax, or tequila to lure them, no fancy papal picado. The dead come anyway in fragments, perforated memories. My grandmother wearing a man's fedora, a secret greeting card folded into her dress pocket. My grandfather, who burned basura in his basement fireplace, sending obscene odors throughout the neighborhood, whose last act was to eat a bowl of strawberry ice cream in the middle of the night. The boy I smoked pot with behind the brick chimney in the attic of his parents' home, wrapped together in his sleeping bag. He confessed he had no plan for after graduation, and he laughed, and he never needed the plan. The stillborn girl, who looked like a baby bird with bulging eyes, curled in a nest under the acacia. The man I'd once thought was the one who wasn't, and whom I couldn't live with once I understood that, who on a tear of amphetamines put a gun to his head. The dead. I want a belly of bravery. I want to know the kindness sent out of the cage of the heart, an eye that never becomes insensate to the invisible spectrum, an ear that never dulls to the song of the pulse. The night grows long until it's short, and the sweetened tongue kisses the breath, and the breath is the breath is the breath. And the next I think I will read is Dislocation. The girl arrived in a wooden crate, fighting the space for air with moths, her belly swollen, yet empty, tiny mouth askew. I once loved the smell of sawdust. He takes her down the hall. His wedding ring glimmers. They retreat to the spare room with shelves of unlabeled green bottles, the high window of colored glass glinting like blood. I go outside to study, broken pieces of language from the guidebook. Sit on the curb in the baking light. At my side, the pocketbook he got me at the farmer's market, a diamond pattern etched into the strap. I try to feel only my concentration, desire for success. In spite of the heat, my mind frozen. The birds' white wings blur in the sun. The map she is trying to follow. She's been making some difficult paintings using yellow, the shade of an ancient claret. A granted favor, these interludes of solitude, the brush in the hand with its compass, this color like a chalice of bees. Her life after childhood stands as in a closet or under the bed, unknown revelation, ambition, Someday she will look deeply enough to recognize herself in the clouded mirror of shame. The map she is trying to follow is the back of her hand. There is an arrogance in assuming that you belong where you choose to stand. The artist in the world must strike some compromise. Perhaps she is a window, the open glass of every looking eye, or perhaps the dreams of those who sleep on top of her, like the pale fish of ancient rivers. Perhaps the light of the rounded air that shines on the missing in the meadows of yellow silence. Sometimes the sun seems a perpetual noise.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the writer Peg Alford Purcell, reading from her book, Show Her a Flower, a Bird, a Shadow. I love the yellow in that poem that comes back at the end. I wanted to ask you about the form. Well, I said poem, yeah, because these seem like poems to me, but I know you've spoken about them as a hybrid form, flash fiction, which could be prose poems. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure, I'm happy to. So I do think of most of the pieces in this book as hybrid prose. And by that I mean prose poetry. I'm also thinking of there are some pieces that are epistolary in nature. Also, yes, flash fiction and microfiction. Some of the more narrative pieces that are considered fiction are quite short. For example, there are four-line stories in here. But I think that in reality, it's very much almost in the eye of the beholder. The difference is on the page between prose poems and microfiction, for example, are a matter of degree, really, or degrees, really. And I do think, you know, it really is a matter of the reader. So there's quite a range in here. As I said, there are some very narrative type stories that are very short, and then there are others that range to maybe about 3 pages, but none longer than that. And some of these have definitely been published as prose poems, and I think of them that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, listening to them, you know, with a lot of imagery in them and leaping, they really feel like poetry to me. And on the page, maybe because I'm disposed to imagine them as poetry, but yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting that they can be seen in many ways. Could you read a few more?
I would love to. Okay, this one is At the Flower. An answer eliminates all possibilities but one. Just as in marriage. He didn't believe in stopping, resting, or pausing. Drive was everything. Look at the fat bumblebee busy on the flower stalk. The creature anything but in repose, gathering nectar for all it's worth before moving on to the next. That was how to be in the world. He hadn't made himself up. He was the animal of some other's making. His was simply to follow his nature. Woman in a dark gray dress. Two voices that have run like rails through his life, parallel and disconnected, converge and intertwine. Now is his only chance to stop the desperate dreams. He'll soothe her, run his hand over her arm as if feeling for the wound. The elevator doors slide open. the smell of snow, as if on the side of Mont Blanc. A monstrous violet orchid towers. The old record player stands in front of the couch. She, in the dark gray dress, stilled on the brocade sofa. She doesn't look up. No, it's too much for him to expect of himself. In his pocket, the well-chosen card, his fingers trace the words etched into thick white paper. The silence becomes more like a sound in the bed that serves as a cage. Okay. This is a depth so familiar. The day after Christmas, snowing, the countryside white, all the streets. Dark footprints led to the station. Inside, she watched the names of cities display as a train arrived or left. At the end of the day of her ninth birthday, wearing a paper crown on her head, she'd proclaimed she would never get married. Her little brothers and sisters slept upstairs, clutching dolls and stuffed animals, homework finished, candy stashed in their book bags. The roiling green along the edges of her life, that was memory, mostly forgotten life. Once upon a time, there were answering machines, and when she left a message, she believed it played into an empty room. No one could have told her she would go with him because he had a scar, a depth so familiar. Anything can happen, anytime. The medallion he'd worn around his neck caught the sun through the window. His fingers locked around her arms. Anything can happen. She began to apologize, knowing it was too late. He said her voice reminded him of a naked corpse left on a tower for vultures. A smell of sulfur, hot metal, ionizing clouds. Her lip plump with blood. She tried and failed to recall every word she'd said. She tried to seal herself away from the touch of his hand on her body. Days from now, the row of purple fingerprints stamped into her arm. "Open that door and I'll forget," he'd said. But she'd left. She'd gotten this far to the station. Trains arrived and left again, and would. Snow would fall, melt, fall again. And this one will be an example of what we were talking about earlier, a four-line story, really. She wanted to be the girl who came into the restaurant where her family waited to celebrate her, and when she entered, they would each say, "Congratulations," and many would mean it, at least one.
Oh, yeah, that ended before I thought it would. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the writer Peg Alford Purcell. And she's reading from her book, Show Her a Flower, a Bird, a Shadow. One thing I really like about your work is that the variation in length and yet I feel like often we're starting in the middle of a world and it's not fully explained, which I kind of like. You know, we don't know, we may not know exactly where we are or have background, but we're inside feeling or situation. And I'm sure that was intentional.
Very much so. You know, I have many different strategies for how I write, and I'm sure the same is probably true for everyone. You know, sometimes there's a gift and something just comes to you and you don't have to revise it 80 times, maybe only 20 instead. But also, some of these, the longer pieces in particular, started out much, much, much longer, and then it's just a carving away and paring down and carving away and paring down and really just seeing how much I can get away with, in a sense. How much do we really, really need to be there on the page? Because, of course, the reader or listener fills in the rest, and that's how it becomes someone else's. Mm. So definitely intentional.
And so there is a lot of room for the reader to come in mm-hmm. and move around and do what they want,
right?
Which is kind of nice.
Right.
I wanted to be sure to talk about your reading series. You're the founder of a national reading series called Why There Are Words. So can you tell us about that series?
Sure. Sure, I would love to. I started this nearly 8 years ago. It will be 8 years in January in the San Francisco Bay Area. I had just moved there, and I really wanted to not waste time, I would say, and just get to know other writers. And so that seemed like a good way to do it, let's put it that way. So it's been going along, you know, fabulously. I never really expected that it would become something that it has, you know, branching out now. It's there's a branch here in Pittsburgh, which is fabulous. There are branches in New York City, Portland, Oregon, Austin, Texas, LA. Soon there will be one in New Orleans and a few other places. So it's done amazingly well, and as I said, I never expected that to happen. And it has also branched into, we've now started a nonprofit publishing venture, which is called WTAW Press, and we just put out our first books this past September, so mm-hmm. like a week ago or so.
Wow, yeah. That's great.
Yeah,
yeah, and you know, starting out, as you said, to get to know people, you have, and now
definitely,
you're all over the country.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm really happy to have a branch of this in Pittsburgh. I know that you, Nancy Corbel, who is an associate of yours from the Warren Wilson graduate MFA program,
right.
Is running it in Pittsburgh.
And doing a fabulous job. And it's quarterly here, so and there's one, well, I'm not so soon, you know, there's one every quarter, so and she's just doing a fabulous job, and I think is the perfect organizer for it.
Okay, so we have time for a few more.
Okay, all right, so let's see. Well, why don't I read the piece that the book takes its title from, which is called Petal, Feather, Particle. Show her a flower, a bird, a shadow, and she will show you what is simultaneously forming and falling apart, what is both witness and sign along the way on this rough earth, a shell already cracked. She thought she could raise a child with only minimal intercession, but now, as she was being driven to the hotel, found herself looking up at the ceiling of the car, mumbling a quiet prayer. Her daughter was like her, too quick to do everything. The girl's father had been someone she once knew or thought she had, a man who laid her in repose on the bed and gave her waist a tender squeeze before arranging her hands on top of her, placing the right over the left, palm over knuckles. He studied her in that corpse-like pose, letting his glass with a float of lime warm in his hand before his mouth captured hers. She'd come in from that life long ago, covered child rearing herself. To say that she had managed well would be to deny the truth of the flower, the bird, the shadow. She would try to give her daughter a talk, though surely the young woman too understood there's nothing available to speech, no wild and strange language that can reveal the organizing principle that pulls the body toward its center, this trivial fact of human nature, composition and decomposition of every petal, feather, and light particle. But it was only kindness, necessary kindness, that she try. And so they were scheduled to meet in the hotel by the harbor, a place where she thought the sea would soothe her, where she would set out to speak in the way gondoliers push their boats away from the Venetian docks. A girl in trouble. The expression implied that the girl was in danger contained her own peril. She would make clear to her daughter that this wasn't so. "Now, you won't likely become a famous dancer in Russia," she would say to her girl, and they would share a small smile at the idea that her daughter might have ever entertained such an aspiration. What her daughter had ever wanted, she truly didn't know, and that knowledge was contained within her, a small sunken place, heavy and aching. It was not too late to learn, she reassured herself, but was this simply another beautiful idea she was still trying to believe, and if so, where was the love in that? The car pulled up in front of the hotel with its grand facade. She wanted to cry out, fly toward the glittering ocean, a rose gripped in her hands, petals littering her shadow as it disintegrated over the deep waters.
I'm not sure if I'm correct here, but I keep feeling this sense of containment in your work and restriction in the content of the work. I mean, there's obviously there's corpses and there's death, but I keep feeling this sense of being restricted. I don't know if that's true. Do you think that's happening?
I think yes, and I think that many of the pieces are about protagonist or those senses of containment wanting to break out and be free of those restrictions. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And yet there's this beautiful voice, I think, in all the pieces, which it's a really interesting combination as a listener to hear this, and you have a nice voice, but what I mean is the voice in the pieces that it's just a beautiful voice, you know, juxtaposed with this containment and restriction is kind of disturbing, you know.
I like that. you know, you've given me something really wonderful,
okay,
new to think about.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's haunting. Okay. We have time for a little more.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And now I'll be thinking about that as I read this as I read this piece. This is called Fragmentation. She hated the story about how the old fishermen cut up sea stars, throwing each arm into the sea. An abundance of mutilated creatures, 5 fragments then for every one. It frightened her to think about an ocean of broken living beings awash in their own weeping juices, working to recreate themselves, vulnerable and having to hide until they could become whole again. Her eyes were red-rimmed in the mirror when she gave up trying to sleep and went into the bathroom for a cool drink of water to rinse away the salt. Okay, and let's see. This is another four-sentence story. How things are. Is everything okay? It's fine. It's fine. It's okay.
So, I mean, the listeners can't obviously see this, but, you know, you have some very short pieces, but then you have pieces that go on for pages and pages. And I think that one thing to think about is that this, I mean, this is a book that we're not used to seeing, that I'm not used to seeing, because of the range of form and the range of sort of feel of the pieces. And I think, I mean, we touched on this earlier, but you said this was published as a book of fiction. Is that correct?
It was, yes.
And yet there are pieces in here that have been published as prose poems.
That's true. Very true. Yes.
And but in your mind, that's not a conflict, or you don't have a need to make it one or the other.
I really don't. I think it's so interesting that we are moving into, well, I don't know that we are moving into, but I'm seeing more and more of hybrid works all the time. For example, we're seeing, you know, with sort of hybrid memoir and fiction and poetry all in one book. And if I'm not mistaken, I haven't read the whole thing yet, but I think that Sherman Alexie's latest, the memoir about his mother, contains poetry. And I'm not quite sure if there are stories in there, but I mean, my mind tells me that he incorporates stories as well, but I could be wrong about that. In any case, we are seeing more and more of this, and I think that it reflects something probably larger in society in a way. So I did start out as a poet, and then I moved into writing fiction and, you know, traditionally long stories, but I think for myself, I may be moving back more towards poetry, including, you know, more traditional verse forms. So maybe this book is just a reflection of, you know, some changes that are happening with me as well.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. We're out of time, but I want to thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you, Jan. Okay. Thank you so much.
It's The Writing of Peg Alford Purcell, and one more time, her book is Show Her a Flower, a Bird, a Shadow. You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 WESA.